Hey there, everybody. It is Wednesday, April 4th, 2012, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm Ken. As always, you can get in touch with us. Drop us a line and send us an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our dog and pony little gay show. And of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. I can't even begin to tell you all where we're sitting right now and who I'm sitting with. We'll start easier with who I'm sitting with. The Reverend Emily Heath back on this show.
Hey, Ken.
How the heck are you?
I'm great.
We're in a church.
We are in a church.
This is the first time in the 4 years that This Show Is So Gay that we have broadcast in a church. So I need to know what the rules are. Mm-hmm. I need to know what I could say that would make me spontaneously burst into flame.
Right.
I need to know why there's a Jesus over my right-hand shoulder, who I swear to you all, it's a lovely carving. His eyes follow me. I feel like his eyes are screaming, gay Jew, gay Jew. Anywhere I go here in the church, his eyes follow me. You're looking at it right now because he's looking at you, right?
Well, he's not looking at me. He's looking at you. It's the funny part.
I can't even. I just turned around. I had to turn back. I'm going to face the technology because it's more comforting to me. His eyes follow you.
Well, it's weird because they're not following me. Like, I'm literally sitting here and he's looking at you.
He is looking at me. All right. That's really creepy, and I kind of want to just scrap this week's show, but we'll keep going because we're in a church. So what could I say that would be – I'm not very disrespectful, though. I'm not the kind of guy that's disrespectful.
I don't know.
I said gay Jew, and I'm still sitting here, so.
Yeah. I haven't burst into flame yet, okay. So I think you're okay.
And you've stood up there.
I've stood up there, yeah.
And this is like a holy time, right?
This is Holy Week.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
I know that there's a lot going on. It's actually called Holy Week.
It's holy.
People are going to think I'm the dumbest person when they listen to this.
Like, no.
Why doesn't he know things? So it's Holy Week.
Holy Week.
It was Palm Sunday.
It was Palm Sunday. Yeah.
And you get palm.
You get palms.
You get palms.
Yeah.
And then today, what's today?
Today's Wednesday.
Yeah. Okay, so it's not really a thing. All right. Friday is a big deal.
Well, tomorrow's a big deal.
Oh, tomorrow is a big deal.
And then Friday is also a big deal.
All right, what's tomorrow?
Tomorrow's Maundy Thursday.
What is it?
Maundy Thursday.
Okay.
And some places call it Holy Thursday. It's where we commemorate Jesus and the Last Supper, and the Last Supper he ate with his disciples. He washed their feet. He served when we celebrate communion, we're commemorating that night.
Okay.
And it's the night before he was betrayed. So we remember that night, and we remember what happened that night. And he was with his disciples and still loved them, even though he knew they were all going to abandon him by the end of the night.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's like a bad party waiting
to
happen.
It's
all right.
Kind of like, you know, the dinner party gone bad.
Yeah, a little bit.
But, you know, there's something about, you know, remembering that time. And
loving unconditionally.
Loving unconditionally.
See?
Exactly.
I could work in this church.
Exactly.
So that's Thursday, and then Friday is nothing.
No, Friday is Good Friday.
Friday is a big deal.
Friday.
Good Friday is a big deal.
Friday, we commemorate the crucifixion. And, So they're kind of hard days. They're hard days of the church year.
Okay. But what do we do to commemorate the crucifixion?
We retell the story, the passion story, and we have a worship service here. And, like, to me, these 2 days are so important because they're the days that you learn, you know, Christians believe that Jesus was God incarnate. So this is God suffering. And so for me, this is what I learned from this is that, you know, learning how to be with someone who is suffering and learning how to walk with someone who is suffering. And churches don't talk about that enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, to me, it's like, this is God going through all the human stuff.
Okay.
So
are we still angry at the Jews or are we? No, we're not.
This is the legacy of anti-Semitism. Like,
right.
You know, the Jewish people did not crucify Christ. It was actually the Roman authorities. But the Jewish people, you know, that was a really good reason to scapegoat him.
Yeah.
You know, what was this misreading of the text that had nothing to do with the Jewish people. It had to do with the religious authorities.
Right.
It had to do with the Roman government. And
the gays. The gays did something,
I'm sure
didn't
they?
Yeah. I'm telling you, I can't. It's a radio show, so people can't see that I keep looking over my right-hand shoulder to see if Jesus is still looking at me. He's totally still looking at me. So,
yeah.
We cracked a little bit of smile. Is that blasphemy? See, I don't know.
He's like, yeah, you know.
Okay. Yeah. That's okay. There's so much. And we should say, so you are the reverend of now one church. Previously two churches.
Yes, just one church now.
Don't say just one church.
And
that carries duties that are more than just Sunday.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you are ministering to your flock.
To my flock. Yeah. For like, you know, people think clergy just work on Sunday mornings. Like a 50-hour week is good for me. Usually I'm like more than 50 hours.
Do you ever call them your flock to their face?
Well, that's kind of the religious language. I don't really say, oh, you're my flock.
Oh, but I totally would say that all the time. That? I think yeah. I'm going to start saying that to my students. Like, all right, flock.
Flock, come on.
I really want to get lunch. Get out of my way. Yeah, no, I might start using it. Well, my whole goal was to gather, and I thought this was a lofty goal. Let me gather together some faith-based queer stories in the news. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's going to be anything this week. Mm-hmm. Holy cow, there is so much going on this week. Yeah. And I guess every week.
Yeah.
But there's a lot going on right now. So you ready? We're going to talk about some news. There's a lot of news happening.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that something that I feel that you have never done.
Okay.
So let's confirm.
All right.
We'll start over in Ireland.
Uh-huh.
A Northern Irish priest... has sparked, do you already know this
I know
one?
This one. Yeah.
He sparked an uproar. Is there a listserv that they send this out on? He sparked a local uproar after he accidentally, mm-hmm. it was accidentally Jesus over my right hand shoulder, he accidentally displayed a series of pornographic gay images to a group of parents during a primary school meeting.
Mm-hmm.
As the BBC is reporting, Father Martin McVeigh projected 16 indecent images of men onto a screen as part of a PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. I love that it was a PowerPoint presentation during a March 26 meeting for parents. One 8-year-old child is also reported to have been present during the meeting. Quote, he was visibly shaken and flustered, that said one parent.
Mm-hmm.
He gave no explanation or apology to the group and bolted out of the room. Oh, that's kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah.
The coordinator and the teachers then continued on with the presentation. Everybody seemed a little bit horrified and distracted. So that, because I've checked your history, that has not happened to you.
That has not happened to me, no.
That's got to be a little bit embarrassing.
I would say so. And first of all, it's like, dude, you know, check your computer before
make
a presentation.
I always run through my PowerPoint. Let this be a lesson not about pornography in the church. Let it be a lesson about you should always review your PowerPoint.
You
I do it multiple times before I click start presentation.
That's right.
Is really more about presenting and conferences than about the church
pornography. But another point is, you know, when are we going to have healthy discussions about sexuality in the church? So that, like, we're not having these moments that are, you're looking at Jesus.
I just turned over my right-hand shoulder. I want to make sure that he's okay with what you're saying. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, but, you know, we never talk about sexuality in the church, and so it becomes this forbidden topic we never talk about. And so, you know, it comes out in these different ways where we're hiding our attractions and we're hiding, you know, instead of talking about healthy sexuality, it's like, you know, it's like putting something in a pressure cooker and just turning on the heat. Eventually, it's going to explode.
Right.
And when we tell people, you know, you have to stay celibate or you have to do this, and that's not actually what they're called to do, you know, you can't be gay, it always ends in a mess.
In a bad PowerPoint presentation. It's like a metaphor,
except
it really happened in
Northern
Ireland. Well, then you will be pleased to know, I assume now all these stories were on your clergy listserv. I think there is such a thing.
You think?
I think there is. I want to get on it. In Grand Rapids, Michigan, there is a new group starting up, a campaign coordinator for Gay Christian. This is their name.
Mm-hmm.
Gay Christian, Yes, !!
Mm-hmm.
This is an initiative designed to send a message outlining concerns over a perceived lack of acceptance of members of the LGBT community in local churches. Members of the LGBT community, along with several local church leaders, lined up at Westminster Presbyterian Church in downtown Grand Rapids
mm-hmm.
this week to show their support for the LGBT community. I thought this was a great quote from one of the organizers. Quote, we are lifting up a lifeline of hope and connection for a population that has been maligned and dismissed in West Michigan and throughout the nation. And this billboard, which will remain here through the month of April, is the first of many public messages of hope.
That's great.
We like that.
Yeah.
How would that go over here in this community in southern Vermont if we put up a big billboard?
You know, I think it would be less of an issue than in Grand Rapids, Michigan,
yeah.
which is sort of a historical area. It's historically a Reformed church stronghold in America. And, you know, it's a very sort of conservative interpretation of Christianity. And, you know, if you're a gay kid growing up there surrounded by, you know, if you're gay, you have to change. That could be a life-saving message.
See?
Yeah.
Gay Christian? Yes.
Yes.
Exclamation. You good with that? I'm going to keep talking to him. It's like we have three hosts today. It's really a little scary. All right. So then over in, where are we? We are in Ohio. We're going to take a tour over to Ohio. Mm-hmm. Maverick Couch. That's his name. It's kind of a fun name.
Yeah.
A gay 16-year-old high school student in Southwest Ohio is suing his school district after the principal prohibited him from wearing a t-shirt declaring, quote, Jesus is not a homophobe.
Hmm.
He has been arguing with the Waynesville High School since last April. It's been a year, my gosh, when Principal Randy Gephardt first told Couch to turn his shirt inside out. He was observing Gay Lesbian GLSEN's National Day of Silence, mm-hmm. an annual event across the country. I'm a little weird about GLSEN's Day of Silence. I totally support it, mm-hmm. except that I would prefer a day of shouting.
There you go.
Yeah. It's so funny. I love GLSEN. I think GLSEN is my, I've said it repeatedly over the past 4 years, mm-hmm. GLSEN is without question my organization of choice. So mm-hmm. I think I get a little defensive because I don't want to say anything bad about GLSEN.
Right.
That said, I hedged it when I said it before. I don't really like the Day of Silence.
Yeah.
I think these are kids that spend their whole year silent.
Exactly.
And so I'm not into this day when everyone mimics the silence that they face on a daily basis. I would like a day that's really focused, which I get it. It's ally building. It's mm-hmm. It's really not for the gay kids. It's for everyone else to be as silent as these gay kids are feeling.
Right.
But then I wanted that paired with the LGBT day of shouting.
Right.
That actually creates some change the next day, if not during lunch or something like that.
Yeah.
So the principal said the shirt was, quote, sexual in nature and therefore indecent and inappropriate in a school setting. And so there's a picture of the shirt. It's got one of those Jesus fish, which I don't really understand what that is. So you should tell me right now.
Okay. Jesus fish. It's the symbol, you know, I'm going to make you fishers of people is what Jesus said. And so there was this fish symbol the early Christians used when they were still persecuted.
Should I know more than I do?
No.
Okay,
no,
good. That makes me feel better because I'm about to ask even worse questions. So it's a Jesus fish with a rainbow.
Right.
There's a rainbow on it. So it says Jesus is not a homophobe. Do we feel that that is sexual in nature and therefore indecent and inappropriate?
I think that's about as sexual in nature as a wedding ring is.
There you go.
You know, in that it's an indicator of, you know, it's an indicator that one has a sexual orientation. And actually, mm-hmm. it doesn't even say that this kid has one.
No.
It just says that Jesus doesn't hate people who have a sexual orientation other than straight. And that's not sexual. That's, you know, it's a ludicrous argument.
And GLSEN came out with a statement. I feel like I was critical of GLSEN and I'm so defensive. But we should be critical of organizations that we enjoy just as much as we're critical of organizations that we perhaps don't support as much.
Mm-hmm.
But GLSEN came out and said, GLSEN came out and said, quote, schools should be places of learning and development, and that includes a student's right to express who they are and what they believe in. It seems, however, the school district is engaging in the very kind of bullying that creates unsafe school climates.
Yeah.
So there's that. Now, this is perhaps, this is the story that might push some buttons. This is a story where if I'm going to burst into flame here in this church,
this is going to be it.
This is going to be it.
All right.
What do you know about queer Christs? I didn't know this was a thing.
I don't know much about it.
Okay, let me tell you. I didn't know about queer Christ. So visions of a queer Christ are on the rise as Easter approaches, which is Sunday. You should know Easter is Sunday.
Yeah, I'm aware
of that. I don't want you to miss anything because that would be such a great moment if, oh God, I didn't even know it was Easter, and then Ken reminded me, and that was great. So, queer Christ, the conventional Jesus is no longer enough, some groups say. I'm so uncomfortable over my right shoulder now. Christ stories for everyone, but lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people get excluded, some say, when conservatives use Christian rhetoric to justify hate and discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
Every community presents Jesus in their own way. There's a black Jesus, an Asian Jesus, a female Christa. I've never seen that.
Yeah, that doesn't happen as much these days, but that was a movement kind of in the late 70s, early 80s.
Okay, I had no idea. Yeah. And now a queer Jesus to set people free and heal some of the damage done in Christ's name.
Mm-hmm.
Many, including the author of this article, and this was from the Huffington Post. This is from Kittredge Cherry, who is a lesbian Christian author and art historian. She is the founder of JesusInLove.org. I don't know them.
I don't know
them. Okay. So she says that this is a good thing that more depictions of a queer Jesus are a good thing. Mm-hmm. Queer Christ images are emerging now in theology books, at art galleries, on stage, in churches, and across the World Wide Web. The author specializes in covering the growing number of Queer Christ projects through the Jesus in Love blog. Mm-hmm. And there's different books that depict a Queer Christ. How about the Queer Christ?
You know, I've heard this idea has been around for a long time.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, and some people say, oh, well, you know, Jesus had this disciple that he really...
Right. There's a book about this. There's
right.
I can't find it. But there's a book about that...
The disciple Jesus loved.
Yes, right? Something like, yes, there you go.
You know, and I think, to me, do I think Jesus was gay or queer? No, you know, I don't think I think that. But the question for me is, we all make Christ in our own image. You know, Christ has come to, well, we think Christ looks like the guy behind, over your shoulder, right? Well, no, you know, he was from the Middle East. Like, he didn't have blonde hair and blue eyes and, you know, and so... We have to be careful when we're trying to make Christ in our own image. But the other side is, why does this make people so angry? What if Jesus were gay? Why does that make people so angry? You know, because you know they're not, that they're going to get, you know, skewered by the Christian right on this.
Yes.
Why, you know, what should make people so angry about the fact that, you know, God who loves all of us and created all of us may have come as one of us? Did, you know, was Christ gay? I don't think there's really any evidence for that, but...
Was he homophobic? That's the question, because this school is saying it's indecent to say that Jesus is not a homophobe.
Yeah, well, there's not, I mean, Jesus never talks about, you know, sexuality, about homosexuality or anything like that, you know, so no.
There you go. There's another piece on the Huffington Post right now called, the title of the article is Was Jesus a Homophobe? Mm-hmm. And that's Michelangelo Signorelli.
Yeah.
And he's got it's a really great piece, so people should stroll on over to HuffingtonPost.com and click on the Gay Voices section and check that out. I don't know. I have all these other stories and I do want to talk about them, but I feel like we're still at this point where either the Bible says something or it doesn't, but I guess it's just not that black and white.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
Reverend, either it says that
you want the black and white.
I just don't understand. There's a degree to which I don't understand. And I know it makes me really childish and immature. And, mm-hmm. and I didn't know that there's a thing on Thursday that's very important to Holy Week. I didn't even know it was Holy Week. Either the Bible condemns something mm-hmm. or it doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and the hard thing about reading the Bible is that the Bible contradicts itself in places. You know, the Bible will say one thing in one place, and then you go to another book of the Bible and it says something else. And we have to remember that these are 66 books, separate books, combined into one book, written in different times and different places and different contexts, and that I believe God is speaking through these pages and we should take it seriously. But can we look at it and say that this is all literally true for a 21st century person? And look at passages and not read them in their context. Passages like women be silent in church. Passages like slaves be obedient to your master. I mean, you've got to, you've got to use your brain when you're coming at this and say, let's look at the whole scope here. It demands that level of, if this is the most important thing in your life, reading the Bible should demand that level of investigation and not just, you know, well, this is what it says in black and white and that settles it.
Well, yeah, but people are picking and choosing and they make their defenses based on it. And
yeah,
it really is the core of a lot of folks' argument.
That's right, yeah. And to me, it's, you know, we're not even reading the original text. The original text is in Hebrew and Greek, you know. Very few people do the work to learn the languages and go back and look at the original text. And we're not familiarizing ourselves with the context. And what do you do when you have those two passages that don't add up, you know, that literally you could go either way on them? And that's where you have to have more than just your ability to read the black and white. Yeah. And you have to rely on, you know, what the Spirit is telling you and the context. And to me, I always go back to for Christians, what the greatest commandment is, which is love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind and love your neighbor as yourself. And, like, that's the big test.
That's it?
You know?
Why can't we just stick with that?
Well, that should be the big test.
Why can't that just be the entirety of the Bible?
Well, in a way, it is.
It is. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
We don't need these other stories.
Yeah.
We just need those couple lines, and we read them all over. And
well, read everything you read in the Bible and through that lens.
Yeah. Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
That's a good way to do it. That's a good way to do it. There's another great piece. I feel like I'm very Huffington Post-centric this week.
I write for Huffington Post.
I know you do.
Yeah.
John Shore, who is the author of Unfair, Why the Christian View of Gays Doesn't Work, he has a great piece on there right now called The Best Case for the Bible Not Condemning Homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a couple different pieces in here, and he explains them. So God does not ask us to choose between compassion and faith in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like it's true.
Yeah.
If there is no clearly stated directive in the Bible to marginalize and ostracize gay people, then Christians continuing to do so is morally indefensible and must cease.
I would agree with that.
I would. So I'm assuming that there is no directive there in the Bible to marginalize and ostracize gay people.
There, you know, there are...
Wasn't it Ruth? Didn't Ruth say that? It's one of the only names I know.
Is it?
She's got a whole book, doesn't she?
She does have a whole book, yeah.
Was she influential? What did Ruth do?
Well, Ruth was the... Ruth is the passage that we hear read at a lot of weddings, including a lot of straight weddings, where it's Ruth talking to her mother-in-law, Naomi, about, don't press me to leave you or turn back from you. My people shall be your people, my God, your God. Or actually, other way around. Your people shall be my people, your God, my God. And so there's this book of Ruth in the Bible, a very good example of a strong biblical woman. And also an example of commitment that, you know, it's funny, a lot of straight couples read that at their wedding, and I always want to think, do you know it's about another woman?
Ruth?
Yeah.
All right, so we like Ruth. Ruth is a good one. Here's another one. Heterosexual Christians are being unbiblical by using the clobber passages as justification for applying absolute standards of morality to homosexual, quote, sins that they are themselves, that they themselves are not tempted to commit, while at the same time accepting for themselves a standard of relative morality for those sins listed in the clobber passages that they do routinely commit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A little picking and choosing.
A little pick and choose, yeah.
There's more. I'm going to do more from this. The Bible isn't a rule book, and Christians cannot lift out of its context any passage from the Bible and still hope to gain a clear understanding of that passage. Well, that's exactly what you said.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we agree with that. And then using the four Old Testament passages to condemn all homosexual acts is not in keeping with any directive from God, nor with the practices of contemporary Christians.
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, there's more. In the clobber passages, Paul, tell everyone who Paul is.
Paul is the sort of great apostle of Christianity who was a convert who had previously persecuted the Christians and then became one of the greatest preachers.
In the clobber passages, Paul condemned... There's something called clobber passages?
Yeah, it's kind of a code word for the clobber verses, the ones that people use to clobber gay people over the head with.
I love how I'm learning things. Yeah. I learned about Ruth. I learned about the clobber passages. There's this guy over my shoulder. In the clobber passages, Paul condemns the coercive, excessive, and predatory same-sex sexual activity practiced by the Romans,
mm-hmm.
and would have condemned the same acts had they been heterosexual in nature.
Right.
That one makes me a little bit more nervous. I don't like the ones where we speculate on what Paul would or would not have condemned.
Yeah.
I don't like that one. The Bible's clobber passages were written about same-sex acts between heterosexual persons and do not address the subject of homosexual acts between a committed gay couple because the concept of a person being a homosexual did not exist at the time the Bible was written.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because there was no concept of gay marriage when the Bible was written, the Bible does not and could not address the sinfulness of homosexual acts done within the context of gay marriage.
Well, yeah, I mean, the context that the verses in the Bible are written about are, you know, nothing like same-sex committed relationships today. They're about sexual assault.
Okay.
They're about... you know, coercive sex acts, they're about same-sex acts with minors. It's not about today.
Yeah.
And you know, to say that's, I mean, it's just ludicrous to apply these passages that have nothing to do with committed loving relationships to committed loving relationships.
Well, John Shore's last point, you either agree with this or you don't, Reverend.
Uh-huh.
The greatest of these is love.
Huh. Yeah, I'm going to go with yes on
that. You're going to go with yes on that.
Yeah.
That's good, because this is going to come up. It's Holy Week.
Yeah.
It's Holy Week. And he actually quotes from Paul in Corinthians, but I feel like even though I'm in a church, I quite frankly can't go that far as to quote Bible verse right now. So that's a great piece. And then Carl Siciliano. Now, Carl Siciliano was on our show last week. He's the executive director of the Ali Fornay Center in New York City, one of the largest, if not the largest, organization in the world that's working with and providing services for LGBT homeless youth.
Right.
So hugely
great,
important.
Great work, yeah.
Now, we talked about last week, he had written a letter, an open letter to Cardinal Dolan saying, look, dude, I don't think he said that. That's just how I translate it. Look, dude, step up and stop persecuting gay youth. And Cardinal Dolan, since last week to this week, wrote him back.
Oh, I hadn't read the response.
He wrote him back. So this is from Timothy Michael Cardinal Dolan, who is the Archbishop of New York. He wrote, "Dear Mr. Siciliano, your letter of March 20th, 2012, together with enclosure has been received." Mm-hmm. I like when people write back, by the way.
Yeah,
I give him credit for this, Archbishop Dolan. Mm-hmm. "For you to make the allegations and insinuations you do in your letter based on my adherence to the clear teachings of the church is not only unfair and unjust, but inflammatory. Neither I nor anyone in the church would ever tolerate hatred of or prejudice towards any of the Lord's children. In the future, you ought to be more careful about personally attacking the character of those who espouse beliefs different than your own. With prayerful best wishes for a blessed Lent, I am faithfully in Christ." Do you sign things faithfully in Christ?
Not generally.
I say from. I still say from. Yeah. So faithfully in Christ. Old and school. That is from Timothy Michael Cardinal Dolan. And if you go over to the HuffPost website, Carl Siciliano has a whole response letter to Cardinal Dolan, mm-hmm. where he thanks him for responding, and he says he's confused by his response. "My letter did not address your character, but your actions and their influence on parents who reject their LGBT children." So go and read that response. I like that the Cardinal responded, even if I don't agree necessarily with what he said.
Right. But, you know, I mean, this whole, "you're attacking me and this is inflammatory." Well, you know what? He was a major force against the push for same-sex marriage in mm-hmm. New York, you know, and that is saying that you want to affect the lives of LGBT people in New York.
Yeah.
And it's really not that far a jump to say that you're not treating all of God's children the same. And to kind of respond back and say that he was being inflammatory. No, he was saying, Your words have real world consequences for these children.
There's a lot of influence that you can have up there when you're in these positions. Speaking of influence, you are going to have some influence this Friday.
Well, we'll see.
No, I mean, and I don't mean just here in church, but so on Friday, you and I are both going to the LGBT Action Day.
Advocacy Day.
I don't even know what it's called. Yeah. I'm totally going. Advocacy Day in Montpelier, Vermont.
That's right.
Which I just learned, I don't know if you know this. Capital of Vermont.
It is
indeed the capital of Vermont. It's also Holy Week. Yeah. And so we're going there and a lot of gay folks are going to go and we're going to meet with legislators. Mm-hmm. And you at the start of the day are giving the,
it's called the
benediction, the opening. What are you doing?
It's called the opening devotional.
The opening devotional.
Yes.
Okay.
And this happens every morning at the start of session. Up at the State House in Vermont.
Have you done this before?
I haven't done this before.
Oh, this is exciting.
This is exciting.
Okay.
This happens in most state legislatures and also in our capital nationally, which is that a faith leader gets up and speaks for about 4 to 5 minutes. And, of course, it's inclusive of the different faith traditions of everyone there.
Yes, because I will be there.
That's right, yes.
And I don't know if I've told you this. I am Jewish.
I've heard that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just want that to be factored into the whole morning devotional. Yes, please bring
Woodcut Jesus.
Woodcut Jesus.
Yes.
Yeah, we're just going to call him that from now on. WJC, yes.
That's right. And have him next to me as I'm, you know, so he'll look out at you across the chamber.
I will not look at you at all. I am transfixed by Woodcut Jesus' eyes.
Right.
Do you know what you're going to say yet? You don't have to tell us yet.
I'm not 100% on what I'm going to say, but, you know, it's not my job to stand up there and tell them how to vote or anything, but. You know, I'm bringing a spiritual message, but the spiritual message that I do want to bring is we're all created in the image of God, and as people who are stewards of their communities and hold influence in their communities here in Vermont, that I would encourage them in their actions to treat every person as a child of God and make sure that they are protected and loved and treated equally under the law.
Now, if you need any help, let me tell you, I actually, and a lot of people know this because I made national headlines, I gave the invocation at my high school graduation.
I didn't know that.
No. At the Pascack Hills High School Go Cowboys graduation in 1995.
I didn't know
that. That was me. I gave the invocation. Okay. And I didn't understand what an invocation was, and so I had to look it up. And then I realized I couldn't do that, so I invoked parents who support their kids. I don't remember what I said, but if you need a hand, I'm a pro at this.
So I'll be like, you know, we can tag team.
Or I could stand behind Woodcut Jesus, and it could be a whole vaudeville thing.
There you go.
That might be disrespectful. That was a bad idea that you just had. So we should not.
You're going to put that on.
We should not do that. All right. Well, that's exciting. All right. So we got Maundy Thursday. Okay. And then we have Good Friday. Saturday, we get a break?
Saturday is technically called Holy Saturday, and some churches...
Okay, you can't just keep putting holy in front of the day of the week and say that it's... Okay, fine, Holy Saturday.
Holy Saturday.
It needs a name. You at least have Maundy Thursday.
Yeah, so Holy Saturday.
Good Friday. Okay.
And then Sunday...
Saturday. Can I come up with a new... You guys could totally use me there in the church to come up with new branding.
We are no branding guys.
All right, so sizzling, although that's a little... That's not a good confluence of images, but Sizzling Saturday.
Or whatever you want to call
it. Whatever you want to call it. Scintillating, that's not good. All right, we'll come up with something. But there should be alliteration, yes.
And then Sunday, of course, is Easter.
All right.
Easter Sunday.
And do you know what you are saying on Easter?
Well, I
have. Is it a longer service?
No, it's still the same kind of hour-long service.
That's it?
Yeah.
No, it's not.
That is it. Oh, see?
Look, and who is calling while we're in the middle of doing a radio interview?
That's the fiance.
You have a fiance we've last spoken.
Yeah.
Who also is in the faith.
That's right. She is. She's going into the God business too.
Wow.
Yeah, she's a seminarian.
All right. So we'll have her on the show once she's done. We need her to get her credentials first. We got to make sure that she passes muster.
That's right.
And then, you know, we will present her credentials to the Woodcut Jesus and see what happens. I was going to say see what he says, but that would be a nice story. All right, so it's only an hour. I thought these services are far, far longer than that.
No, just an hour.
Okay, I could handle that.
You could do that?
Yeah, I could do that. All right, so you come in but it's Easter, so people have expectations that you're going to, this is going to be a lot that's going to come from
you.
You're setting the tone for Lent.
It's a joyful service.
Okay.
Well, Lent is over.
All right. You know, I'm trying here, and you're just not being supportive. Okay. Lent is over. Did you give something up?
Well, no. Lent will be over on Saturday.
Okay.
Yes.
Then that should be incorporated into Saturday's name.
End of Lent Saturday.
Super end of Lent.
Yeah.
I'll come up with something. By the end of the show, I will come up with something.
Excellent.
Now, and Lent, you have to give something up.
Well, not exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. but no.
This is so 101. I love it.
No, this is
Show when people stop listening to this show. It's okay because they're like, this guy's an idiot. No. I thought he had a PhD. He's like an idiot.
No.
Can we get Heidi, who was calling on the phone, to be on
the
show?
She's probably calling in No, Lent, you can give something up.
Okay.
You're encouraged to take on another spiritual discipline in Lent.
And oh. Did you do that?
I did.
Do you keep it to yourself?
I don't talk about it much.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, but you know, a lot of people say, and I actually wrote a post on this on HuffPost, so if people go on HuffPo Religion, it's there, but a lot of people say, you know, you have to give something up for Lent. So they give up chocolate, or they give up coffee, or they give up, you know, whatever, video games, PowerPoints, I don't know.
I would give up PowerPoints in Northern Ireland.
But that's not, the ideas don't give, you know, not just giving something up, because really if you give up chocolate, you know, it's an act of self-discipline, but are you really changing up the world by giving up chocolate? Probably not, you know, but so it's like, what do you take on spiritually? So a lot of people will increase their prayer life, or they'll work like, you know, with a nonprofit more, give more time towards volunteering, do work that kind of makes the world a better place. So
Service Saturday? I'm getting closer to something. We need a core concept.
Yeah.
The holy thing. I'm sorry. With all respect to your religion, that's a total cop out.
Yeah.
And it's it's Holy Saturday.
It needs more. Saturday.
Sanctimonious. That's terrible though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a little bit, yeah.
That's not good at all. All right. Well, you're not gonna be the one that comes up with this. All right. So you're gonna say stuff on Sunday, you're gonna inspire the masses. Do more people come on Easter than other
Yeah.
days?
It's like Christmas Eve, you know. And that's fine. Everyone's welcome. But yeah.
Sans Seder Saturday. I'm just coming up with something. Seder Saturday.
Yeah. We'll keep working.
We'll keep working on it. We'll keep working. Because it is Passover this weekend.
It is.
So.
And that's, yeah.
That's something for my people. For my people.
Yep.
All right. So you're going to give, you're going to inspire everybody. You're going to incorporate in your new spiritual discipline.
Well, I don't know. Maybe.
Okay. We'll but see. But you are already incorporating it in.
Right.
Okay.
So we'll see.
It's very exciting. Yeah. And then on Friday, you're going to set the tone for this legislative session.
That's right. Yeah.
And are you going to talk to legislators as well?
I'm probably going to go see a couple. And then I've got to, of course, get back in the car and come down here for Good Friday.
All right. Good Friday. That's, I still think that word needs a little more oomph too, but.
You need a little more. Yeah.
A lot of it's marketing. There are billboards out in Michigan that are proclaiming what they do. All right. Anything that people should know about the cool things happening here in church these days? Or wherever they are?
Yeah. Well, I just think, you know, a lot more churches are opening themselves up to LGBT people and, are really getting on the forefront. And this is the time I think that churches that are willing to be accepting and affirming, and they really need to be out there spreading that message. Because in the public eye, I mean, if you read the papers, all you might think is that all Christians, you know, don't agree with LGBT people.
Right.
And it's not true. And there is a very solid base of progressive Christians out there. And we're not always good about talking about it, but we need to talk about it more. It's sort of one of our big failures is we just don't talk about it enough.
All right.
Yeah.
More talking in church.
Right.
That's what I hear you saying. Yeah. Do they have to kneel up there?
No.
Okay.
No.
So there's need. It's an hour.
An hour.
I could
no
get
kneeling.
Through an hour in
you
a
could
second.
Do that. Yeah.
this is like the ADD service to me. I thought this was hours long. This is totally doable.
Yeah. No. This is just an hour.
Now, do you the more observant of your flock will they walk in? Mm-hmm. Whenever they walk in next and say something feels different here.
You've been here.
Yes.
Well, because you've been here.
I feel something has changed. Woodcut Jesus.
Forest.
Yes. Woodcut Jesus looks a little different. He's a little frownier.
Yeah.
Maybe a little happier. No, he really isn't. I just look back there. And again, with all respect to whoever carved it, who I spent untold hours carving eyes that are looking at me still. And that's his crown of thorns.
That is.
See?
That is.
I know some things.
Yep.
But as we proved in this interview, not a lot. Not a lot. All right. Here's wishing, what do you say? Wishing you the holiest of Holy Weeks.
I just say, may you have a blessed Holy Week.
May you have a blessed Holy Week. That's
you.
Very exciting. Thank you again for being on the show.
Sure.
All the best.
Thank you.
Every time I feel this way, this old familiar sinking, I will lay my troth down by the water where the river will never run dry. Hallelujah.
I'm gonna let myself be lifted.
Hallelujah.
I'm gonna let myself be lifted.
Hallelujah.
I'm gonna let myself be lifted.
By and by. Troubles down by the water where the river will never run dry. It's been said, and I do believe as you ask, so shall you receive. So take from me these troubles, bring me sweet relief. Where the river will never run dry. Hallelujah.
I'm gonna let myself be lifted.
Hallelujah.
I'm gonna let myself be lifted.
Hallelujah.
I'm gonna let myself be lifted.
By and by, and by, I will lay my troubles down by the water. Where the river will never heart of hearts with no weakness of my highest good. I am
goggles. Down by the water, where the river will never run dry. Where the river will never run dry. This river will never run dry.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we have left the church behind. It is in our hearts, but we are back in the studio. I am flying solo for our last news segment of the day. That's right, more gay news for you, because there is so much going on this week. Let's get to it. Of course, we have to join what feels like the endless, endless, interminable search for a Republican candidate for the President of the United States. We turn to an anti-gay robocall. So last month, in advance of the Ohio primary, there was an anti-gay robocall promoting Rick Santorum, and it was resurrected just yesterday for the Wisconsin race. The call, sponsored by a group called, and keep in mind our previous segment with the Reverend Emily Heath, the group is called Jews and Christians Together. That sounds like the entirety of our last segment. It asked people to, quote, vote for social sanity and Rick Santorum, not for homosexuality and Mitt Romney. It continues, quote, Rick Santorum is the only candidate who can be trusted to uphold traditional marriage, a straight military, and the rights of American children to have both a mother and father. On her show on Tuesday night, our good buddy Rachel Maddow, I love how it just made it sound like I know her. I don't know her, but she's our good buddy because she's, is there anybody who has just such a great voice as Rachel Maddow right now for equality and calling people out on hypocrisy? Rachel Maddow said that she was skeptical of earlier reports about the call because it seemed so freakishly strange, but she now believes it's real. She wondered if it would make voters believe Romney has a running mate called homosexuality. Apparently, the call will go out again as the primary season continues. The website of Jews and Christians Together, really, it's such a lovely, lovely name for a group, refers to an ongoing robocall campaign and portrays Romney as a supporter of LGBT equality and abortion rights, which is not even at all accurate. Because if you turn to, so one of the stories that came out this week, and you have to really follow the paper trail on this one, is that Mitt Romney's Political Action Committee contributed $10,000 to help pass California's Proposition 8, but it did so through a hard-to-detect PAC donation to the National Organization for Marriage, and this is all from documents provided to the Human Rights Campaign by a whistleblower. There's a whistleblower at the National Organization of Marriage. This is a quote from HRC. Quote, it's clear now that Romney was a major financial donor to Proposition 8, but it's also clear that his campaign very cleverly hid this contribution, which is interesting. Maybe that's what the Rick Santorum group is saying, the Jews and Christians Together, the pro-Rick Santorum group. I don't know that they're actually Rick Santorum's group, but maybe that's what they're saying, is that if he was a real candidate, a real Republican candidate, they wouldn't even have taken steps to hide this trail. So that's going on. There's still all of this uproar about the National Organization of Marriage's release last week of their very overt and explicit strategies to drive a wedge between identity groups and other LGBT populations. So to really reach out to African-American and Latino communities and exploit divisions that the National Organization of Marriage thinks are present around anti-gay attitudes in order to repeal gay marriage laws. So that continues to go on. Those documents, if you've not got a chance to read some of those, they are fascinating. Or you could just tune into last week's show because we talk about them pretty extensively there. Can we do happy news? There is happy news out there. A couple pieces of happy news. Staying on the political track, Representative Tammy Baldwin, a candidate for the U.S. Senate for Wisconsin, if she's elected, she will become the first ever LGBT person elected to the U.S. Senate. Out. I should say out LGBT politician. We don't know. There's been a lot of senators. We don't know that someone wasn't gay, but she would be the first out one. She leads a generic Republican candidate by 5 percentage points in a new NBC News Marist poll. 4 GOP primary candidates are vying to face Baldwin in November. So when just up against a generic one, not one of those four, she holds a 5 percentage point lead. So that's very much a good thing. In Chicago, and this is, you know, there are stories like this that just don't often get press because it's not flashy. It's not the robocall. It's not anything like that, but it's a really important story. In Chicago, there is a whole new initiative that's focused on LGBT health. And we have talked about this because LGBT health is a really dicey piece of the puzzle. You have an American population that is often resistant to going to a medical professional, period. So we're taking gay out of the equation, just an American population that is reluctant to go see a healthcare provider. You then add on to that someone who identifies as LGBT who doesn't reveal everything going on with them because they may or may not be comfortable with it. And even if they are, they may or may not be with a healthcare provider who is trained and sensitive. And I should say, and we try to deconstruct LGBT community as much as possible, there is disproportionate issues within the lesbian community, within the transgender community, and the sensitivity of healthcare professionals to deal with those communities. So I do not mean to say that it's the same for the L's, the G's, the B's, and the T's. There's certainly a lot going on there that you can parse out. But as a whole, the LGBT community faces greater health risks because they are less likely to disclose everything going on with them based on where they are in terms of coming out. And of course, based on even if they are out, whether they are with a healthcare professional who may be comfortable with. So all this is to say, in Chicago, health officials are launching a plan to address the unique health needs of the city's LGBT community. Among the plan's goals are improving access to healthcare, tracking hate crimes and violence, and promoting tobacco cessation programs. So this is all a really, really great thing because we have to focus on LGBT health because there's a lot of issues of LGBT health out there. I got an email, and we'll try to get him on the show, but I got a really interesting email from Brian Sims, who is a candidate for the Pennsylvania House of Representatives for the 182nd District. And he wrote, I am running for state now, keep in mind, I can't vote there in Pennsylvania, but I'm sure I'm on a list somewhere. He wrote, I am running for state representative because I believe our city needs better, stronger, and more effective progressive leadership in Harrisburg. My campaign has been focused on creating jobs, investing in our public schools, fighting for seniors, and protecting the environment. But I will never run from the fact that I'm out and proud and that we as a community need representation. When talking about the importance of representative democracy, Barney Frank always likes to say that if you don't have a seat at the table, you're probably on the menu. In Pennsylvania, we don't have comprehensive anti-discrimination laws. This is very interesting. The nation, and this is also part of his letter, the nation has come a long way in 38 years, but Pennsylvania has not. We are the second largest state in the nation to have never elected an LGBT state senator. To have never elected an openly LGBT state legislator. Very interesting, because there are any number of candidates who would say, look, yes, I'm out and I'm proud, but I'm not going to send out an email saying this is one of the reasons that you should elect me. So I have enormous, enormous amount of respect for Brian Sims, candidate for the Pennsylvania House of Representatives in the 182nd District, and we will, of course, try to get him on the show. So pay attention to your local politics. There's a lot going on in local politics that's very important. Now, over in the world of beauty pageants, we don't talk about beauty pageants nearly enough. I feel like not since Claire Buffy, Miss New York, was on the show. Loved having her on the show. The transgender beauty queen who was disqualified. Did you guys hear about this? The transgender beauty queen who was disqualified from the Miss Universe Canada pageant last month. She has now broken her silence following news that she might be allowed to compete. Jenna Talakova, she's 23 years old. She released a lengthy statement through her attorney, Gloria Allred, at an LA press conference just today saying she had been devastated by the initial decision, which she described as unjust. She said, quote, I had always dreamed of being in the Miss Universe competition and having an opportunity to represent my country, Canada. Then I was told by representatives of the Miss Universe Canada pageant that I could not compete because the rules stated that I had to be a naturally born woman, and they said I was not. I have never asked for any special consideration. I only wanted to compete. She did not confirm whether she would, in fact, participate in this year's Miss Universe Canada competition, instead drawing attention to the confusing terminology used in a statement made yesterday by a representative for Donald Trump, who, you must know, owns the Miss Universe organization. She said, quote, "I wish Mr. Trump would just say in plain words whether or not I will be allowed to compete, and if I win, whether I will be allowed to represent Canada in the Miss Universe competition. I also want Mr. Trump to clearly state that this rule will be eliminated because I do not want any other woman to suffer the discrimination that I have to endure." So a statement released by Michael Cohen, executive vice president and special counsel to Donald Trump, stated that Talikova can compete, quote, "provided she meets the legal gender recognition requirements of Canada and the standards established by other international competitions." So we're going to, I want to track that one. Let's see what happens with that one, because that's going to be quite the interesting story. We hope that she can compete. We then hope she wins, and then we want her to win the whole darn thing, and then she gets to go on Celebrity Apprentice. That's what I've learned about our media and what you get to win when you win Miss Universe. Also, yeah, I've been watching Celebrity Apprentice. I'm sorry. I know there are better things to do with my time, but that's, I've been doing it. I'm all caught up. Turning now from Canada to Alaska. I couldn't tell you the last time we had an Alaska LGBT story. Anchorage voters rejected a proposed ordinance to add legal protections for gay, lesbian, and transgender people in a chaotic municipal election fraught with ballot shortages and high voter turnout in many precincts. And this was a bipartisan idea. With more than 90% of the precincts reporting late yesterday, Tuesday, 58% of voters had voted against Proposition 5, the Equal Rights Ordinance that was far and away the most controversial and emotional component of this spring's election. As of late Tuesday, neither side was claiming victory nor conceding defeat. The main group opposing the measure was silent, and its leader did not appear at Election Central or issue any kind of written statement. Trevor Storrs, spokesperson for the One Anchorage campaign, which advocated for passage of the measure, said it was too early to judge anything. He said, quote, "We have complete faith in the electoral process, and the clerk's office needs to be the one to evaluate the situation." He said he doesn't want to say anything else because he doesn't want to make any assumptions or put out any mistruths, but that they're proud of the big turnout. So, very curious. I'm sorry that we haven't been following that story. I didn't see too much in the news about Anchorage and equal rights there, but you got to be curious about what the other side was putting out there. And by the way, I say the other side, I am instantly allying myself with the Proposition 5 supporters. So you have to wonder what folks who opposed it were putting out there in the media or just word of mouth, saying this is why you need to strike down an ordinance, strike down something that would really help guarantee equal rights. It's a little curious. Legal protections for gay, lesbian, and transgender people. What is it that you said to say, no, we have to vote against that. We should not be doing that. So we haven't been following that because I don't even feel like that was in the news all that much. So that's going on in Anchorage, Alaska. A lot going on all over the place. So there's a lot that you guys should be doing in your own communities. We've just had some really amazing responses, particularly to last week's show with Carl Siciliano, of folks looking up on the Ali Fournay Center's website and seeing that odds are they were in a state that doesn't do anything, that doesn't really provide services for LGBT homeless teens. So some lovely emails sent on over to Ken at thisshowisogay.com from people all around the country who are saying, well, what can I do? What if I just do a movie night? Yes, absolutely do a movie night. Raising awareness is a huge piece of the puzzle. You can't get out there and fundraise and build a center or lobby your congressman or talk to your local representatives if they don't have the awareness that there's an issue going on. So keep those emails coming. We love getting your emails at Ken at thisshowisogay.com. We're also in the middle of a guest booking phase. So if you have an idea for a guest, just write it to us. Tell us who you want on the show. We will reach out to them, and I don't know, we have kind of a good track record of getting folks, so it's very exciting. Again, I will say it until the show ends, whenever that may be, hopefully not for a long time, but so appreciative that we have the opportunity to not only hear from you guys, but of course to talk to these amazing LGBT and ally folks all across the world. It's really just, it's an opportunity, and I don't want you for a second to think that everyone here over at This Show Is So Gay is not thankful for you guys for listening, and of course for these guests for calling in. It's just, it's really, this is a privilege. It is absolutely a privilege. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com. We're going to be throwing up all of our guests that are coming up in the next couple months. Very exciting people. And of course, go to the Facebook, type This Show Is So Gay right there into your Facebook. Our page will pop up. You click like, we'll like you back. That's the way it works. That's the way we're a community. Our thanks, of course, to the Reverend Emily Heath and our first ever church broadcast. Our thanks also to Wood Carving Jesus, because he was over my right-hand shoulder, and would that you could have seen how freaky that was. Get out there, folks. Go do amazing things. Go check out your local faith community. Talk to your local faith leaders. Check your PowerPoint presentation before you press play. Please check your PowerPoint presentation before you press play. As we learned, it might be embarrassing for you, and we do not want that for you. But while you're doing all of those amazing things, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
When I closed my eyes so I would not see, my Lord did trouble me. When I let things stand that should not be, my Lord did trouble me. When I held my head too high, too proud, my Lord did trouble me. When I raised my voice too little, too loud, my Lord did trouble me. Did trouble me with a word or a sign, with the ringing of a bell in the back of my mind. Did trouble me, did stir my soul, for to make me human, to make me whole. When I slept too long, slept too deep,
my Lord did trouble me.
Put a worrisome vision into my sleep,
my Lord did trouble me.
When I held myself away and apart,
my Lord did trouble me.
And the tears of my brother did move my heart,
my Lord did trouble me.
Did trouble me with a word or a sign, with the ringing of a bell in the back of my mind. It did trouble me, it did stir my soul.